No donation is too small. Again, thank you for your support of 94.1 FM.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So today, yes, new moon, solar eclipse, not visible here, just annular was visible in Africa, but symbolically, and in a feeling kind of way, it is new moon. And before an eclipse, it really pulls up everybody's kerfuffles. Whoa, you can see it everywhere. Ah, the shadowy kinds of things. Wow, but we're here to heal it. Because all of these planetary being intelligence parts of ourselves, the sun, the moon, Jupiter, Mercury, and until recently Venus. In Virgo, Virgo was always thought of as the critic, the analyst, the master diagnostician, the healer, the medicine woman or medicine man. So, powerful time. So, we are rejoining the choreography of creation on the new moon in Virgo radio, the ecology of well-being. So, more than perfectly, we welcome James Stark, revered permaculture maven with his partner, Penny Livingston. They have been guests many times, really. They run the Regenerative Design Program in Bolinas. And joining, also convening, is Dr. Anna O'Malley. Among the most beloved practitioners of integrated medicine, we love pouring in all over. And we want to honor the ecological nature of health, healing, and vitality, their words, individuals and communities reassuming responsibility for our personal and collective health. They'll be starting a course soon, the Art of Vitality, Wisdom of the Seasons program, starting at the end of September, and you can find out more about that at regenerativedesign.org, with a lot of forward slashes, but you can get there by regenerativedesign.org. Welcome, James Stark.
Great. Thanks for having us on the show.
And welcome, Dr. Anna O'Malley.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's perfect timing. You know, again, part of the Virgo dynamic of how we all aspire to compost our neuroticism is we wonder how it's all perfect. Everything. We wonder how it's all perfect. I was saying to James backstage, you know, that we do get this radio magic opportunity to, you know, spiral well-wishing and blessings out into the world. And, you know, recently it's come up that a good one might be, may humans be attracted to that which is good for them. That would handle so much, don't you think?
That would totally work. Let's do that.
So that's, in a sense, we are very much, you know, I got to say, today is the 20th anniversary of the Visionary Activist Show. Yay!
Oh!
Yeah.
Beautiful.
20
Congratulations.
Years, 20 years every Thursday, woof, 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 dedicated to encouraging autonomy in all beings. So here you both are, let me turn, to you both, and you can play who wants to go first about, you know, the course you're about to teach, which we know is almost full, but so we want to honor that, but also honor it as though people were telepathically attending. So, James, do you want to begin with the dedication of the course?
Maybe, Anna, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. You know, we really were called to develop this course in response to what we are seeing as, you know, sort of the loss of the art of the practice of healing, and, you know, in often people have rushed experiences within medicine, and we know that there is a way of really creating a container, weaving a context for people, as you do so beautifully, but that weaving a context in which people can do their healing work to empower them and to support them and to allow them to reconnect with their body's infinite capacity for healing and for bringing itself back into balance. And that was really the initial underpinning. And then as we've been exploring this, really the ecological framework is something that we've been really developing as an idea that, you know, we have within our body this incredibly elegant ecology, these systems within systems within systems. And we are in relationship with each other and with our communities, and that if we could really empower people to appreciate that potential, that, you know, we wouldn't actually necessarily need to interface with a potentially, or not, maybe not so much, medical system that might not be supporting health as fully as it.
Now, let me ask you a diagnostic question. Are you wearing a headset?
I am not wearing a headset.
Oh, okay. Just because there's a little bit of crackling, and maybe just phone a little bit away from mouth. We'll see.
Okay, great.
It's a diagnostic.
How's that?
We'll see. A diagnostic question. No, did not mean to interrupt your dynamic, but also what I love, and I'll throw this to James, because I was looking at your outline. But also, you know, here we are about to, you know, we're at this turning of the seasons before the autumnal equinox, and, you know, humans have always, up until very recently, you know, understood how to align and cooperate with this dynamic. So, you know, because you'd also mentioned, Dr. Anna had talked about, you know, soups and autumn and things, and I love my friend Dr. Wu saying the Chinese had dealt with problems of modernity, you know, early about overcrowding and tension and everything, and they said two things were really helpful. One, soup for general interior vastness, and that humans were not designed to be any more than 15 minutes on time either way. And I go, that's adorable. So James, let me toss it to you, because you in keeping with the Virgo realm now, you've just gotten back from a cleanse. Why not just put that on the table, so to speak?
Well, cleanses, yeah, it's interesting when you mention the season, because, you know, sometimes we think, oh, the season, what does that mean? But really, we are fall. Right now, we are fall, because we're intimately connected to the sun and the level of light and all that. Our bodies are completely attuned. Our bodies are being fall. Our mind might be somewhere else, but our bodies are fall. And part of having this journey where we go through the seasons is to become aware of and develop the communication with our body so that our thinking mind can get into attunement with that. And then we can make decisions in alignment with our body and what it needs and what it's feeling and what's moving, and it, as we move into fall season and into the winter. And yes, there is a time for cleanses and the letting go and releasing, and especially in an ecology like we have, where we have so many chemicals in our that we've created that are in our life. And so, yeah, I've developed for the last 14 years of having that opportunity to not only get in deep touch with oneself and tune into the natural world and be nature, like really go into a deep connection, but also to release some of what I've picked up as part of my daily life in the chemical realm. So, yeah, it's moving into these cycles and returning from flat field, you know, where you just chug forward and it doesn't matter what's going on outside, to actually being an integral part of the natural world and our bigger body, which health really, it's, you know, when we talk about health, it's really health of what? It's really the health of the whole living organism that the planet is, and beyond that, and the stars. So it's sinking into how do we plug into that, and what role does our senses and our bodies play? And that's a lot of what Anna and I are going to be exploring, is how to go into that deep dive of really replugging our circuitry back into our larger bodies of the plants and the animals and the birds and the stars.
Sorry, I just got to speak on behalf of Virgo in precision. We're still in summer until September 22nd, but we are in the poignant waning of summer into fall. We're in this transitional thing. But yeah, you were about to say something, Anna.
I was. Two things. That the transition periods between summer and fall, in particular, that there's a lot that's moving, and it's a great time to do cleanses, and it's a wonderful time to take time out from the ordinary everyday reality, especially the way our modern lives tend to be structured. It's very busy, a lot of electronic interface, a lot of screen time, a lot of scattered attention, and lack of, you know, a lot of multitasking. That's what many of us are experiencing and enduring, and it's so important to take time out to cultivate sacred space. And that's part of what we're really wanting to create, to facilitate, is people really, you know, each of these 4 3-day weekends are an opportunity for us to really just unplug and, as James said, plug back into the original power source, you know, to really connect with the earth, connect with the stars, connect with the moon, connect with each other. And, you know, through food and through movement and all sorts of, you know, beautiful, time-honored ancient wisdom tradition practices, as well as exploring some of the science that now supports a lot of these ancient practices, but really cultivating that deep connection and that time out of ordinary reality with each other.
You said the magic words, and the duck descends. Quack, 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 quack. You said ancient wisdom. Just because I got to bring in the considering con with sittering stars that is so wildly enthused about what you both are up to and reaching out there. Mercury. You know, Hermes, power of language and diagnosis and the wedding of poetry and art and healing. Retrograde now appears to be moving backwards, which even more backs you up, Dr. Anna O'Malley, by saying, yes, retreat, reflect, review, you know, even, you know, a screen cleanse. Boy, that would be challenging. But I got to say that, you know, there's images for each degree of the zodiac. So right now, right this moment, straight up overhead in California, if you put your little arms up, is Mercury and Jupiter. Again, mind, power of diagnosis, and Jupiter, blessing and story in Virgo. Small things tell big stories. And images for each degree of the zodiac. So they're united at one of my favorite, and which is in a cave overhung with twisted roots, a seeker pours over the glowing pages of an alchemical manuscript. And we go, whoa!
Oh, yummy.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. And, of course, the glowing pages is not an iPhone. The glowing pages of an alchemical manuscript is, you know, nature herself as well. So you said yummy, James Stark. So, yes, isn't that yummy? It's like, who brought what to this party? Like, all ancient traditional guidance systems want to come alive and be by being animated in a way that you both are doing and given fresh expression. But yummy, say more about yummy.
Well, I was just thinking about when you brought up about languages, because our language and our usage, we've pulled from our dictionary, and we've got these words that we're using and how to express things that have been really reflective of this industrial age that we've been going through and stuff. And as we begin to shift back into a nature-connected and holistic way of being with the earth, it's pulling up new language of how to express that, and how do we communicate with each other in new ways other than, you know, across the office, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like really how do we communicate? How do we communicate love? How do we communicate what nature is doing and what we're feeling in the seasons? How do we even communicate what our body is telling us? You know, like, I love touching into it. That's why I find that really juicy about, like, how do we choose to express that? How do we communicate with each other?
All right. Well, as concerned citizens for specificity, how do we?
Well, I have some thoughts about, you know, I mentioned earlier the art of healing,
yeah,
and the art of medicine, and that is something within medicine. It used to be that medicine men, medicine women really held a very a spiritual part of society, that you went to them for wise counsel, and that it was a consideration of the whole person, body, mind, and spirit. And that of course you would address what's going on in a spiritual level with an individual, that's absolutely the underpinning of many physical conditions. And that has been lost. We've been sort of relegated to technicians and treating the body as a machine. But we know science, you know, and I don't hold science up to the altar as that many people do, because there are so many ways of knowing, but science is important and powerful, and we know beautifully that there's great science out there that supports the use of the cultivation of love, the appreciation of beauty, the cultivation of gratitude. There's a whole field of positive psychology that really shifts the frame of how do we, you know, not just pathologize people's mental health, as opposed to how can we support people? How can we develop practices that optimize our mental well-being, that optimize our physical well-being? Because, of course, as we know, the two are not, they're not separate. Everything is all related. And that really cultivating an appreciation of beauty and developing a language around it, and poetry is a beautiful way of expressing that, really, really using the senses and developing a mindful appreciation of connection with beauty, with color, with scent, with the taste of food, developing a mindful moment-to-moment awareness of what we are putting into our bodies and how it's making us feel, cultivating a listening relationship with our body. These are really powerful practices that feel good, reconnect us with our humanity and with nature herself, and they actually do a whole lot of good on a physical level, as far as lowering blood pressure and turning on genes within our cells that are less likely to create chronic disease, inflammation, cancer. You know, there's some fascinating work out there that suggests that really, really cultivating these whole human experiences that we know to feel good actually do heal us.
Well, we certainly do want our language derived from nature rather than machines, so cultivating is a great thing. But so how specific? I want to smell the rose. How do we cultivate beauty and gratitude? Like, we read a poem, or do you have one on hand, or like, what's an incarnational specificity so that people could smell it and taste it and eat it?
Well, I think that it is using the senses. You know, so for example, so our program is taking place in this beautiful garden. So making sure that we have time to really mindfully wander within the garden, to go sit underneath a tree, to really feel the sun on your face, and to give yourself permission to just fully drop into that experience, to connect with the breath as you connect with the earth, perhaps using imagery to do that, or reading a poem. I can't believe that I'm caught without a poem right now. I can't believe that. James, do you have one? It's so unlike me. But, you know, and really looking at a flower as though, you know, some people are photographers, so looking with the eye of, wow, actually, a patient brought me gorgeous dahlias today. I'm actually sitting right in front of this bouquet of gorgeous bright red, scarlet, and crimson dahlias. Like, letting yourself be drawn into the very center of a gorgeous flower and just remaining there, you know, really taking in the beauty with full appreciation.
So for both of you, how long have you been able to not look at a screen or a phone?
Well, for me, 2 years ago I went on a vision quest and I had 3 solo days in the desert. So I've got that's in contemporary reality for me. It was actually longer than that, but that's when total unplugged, not even near anything. So it was a week altogether. So yeah. And you know, it wasn't until that total unplug that I had an appreciation for how much these constant interventions of the emails and all that, what kind of a profound impact that has on our being. It was incredible.
No, that's why I asked, because I know myself, you know, I can feel the addicted thing, you know, going, check the thing. There's no need to check now in case, you know, somebody's offering you $1 million out of the blue. Because it does, and I want to throw it back to both of you. It's true. One of the ways the astral mytho language speaks is, it says, you know, to ancient mind would not know what modern mind was talking about when it spoke of healing and art as separate. You know, ancient mind would go, what are you modern people talking about? There can be no healing, as you just said, Dr. Anna. There can be no healing without beauty and art, and no beauty and art without healing. They are one thing. And they want to be rejoined. And I do just want to do a shout out, because I had just a fantastic medical experience at Peninsula Hospital in June. I just want to do a little shout out to them and the aesthetics. Everybody was dressed in green and purple in the surgery, and there was an emergency thing, and I just want to go, that went really well. Thank you for doing it. And they had a water filter, and it was really good. So just a little shout out going, that was a very good modern medical experience. In contrast, I've just met friends who, you know, went to important hospitals, you know, UCL, and were, you know, just seriously damaged. I mean, so a lot of people are wanting, and Dr. Anna O'Malley, you're good at this too, to heal their not only the actuality of terrible things that might have happened to them in a hospital, but also their kind of their antagonism to the thing. And you know, so are you a gentle guide going, you know, come this way, no matter what terrible thing has happened to you in a hospital, here you go. Are you good that way?
Yeah, I mean, I strive to be, or non-striving, however you want to phrase it. But I actually have had wonderful experiences training in the hospital. I did my residency at UCSF at San Francisco General Hospital, which has a heart like no other as far as hospitals are concerned.
Oh, good.
And such good work and such good. I mean, I love the technical side of medicine too. It's powerful, and thank goodness we have it. But the vast majority of expenditures within healthcare are related to chronic disease, and the majority of which can be addressed well and reversed well before they land someone in the hospital, which it's not a great place to be. I mean, I loved supporting people in the hospital and advocating for them and you know, comforting them and holding their hand and you know, cultivating the presence of heart as along with the intellectual capacity that it takes in order to be a competent physician. But we really, there can be a lot of harm caused there. People can develop infections. And there was, back in May, there was a British Medical Journal article that got a lot of press that claimed that the third leading cause of death in the United States is medical error. And there's been some pushback and some looking at those numbers, and maybe the statistical analysis and methodology wasn't quite what it should have been. But the point remains that when people are being moved through a system incredibly quickly, and physicians, I mean, everyone who goes into medical school wants to help, and they really, when they take that oath to do no harm, we really don't want to do any harm. We want to help, but we're often feeling rather constrained by a system that is, you know, operating with health as a commodity, and we're moving people quickly, and we don't have necessarily the time to develop the relationship and the listening and the responding to a whole person's needs that is really required to affect health. And it is frankly dangerous. You know, it's really hard to spend 20 minutes with someone who has six or seven or more serious chronic illnesses on, you know, 12 medications that may or may not be interacting with each other, and feel like it's a safe situation for anybody. And burnout is a real problem within medicine. About 50% of family medicine providers and other primary care providers and emergency room physicians, the front lines of medicine, are burned out. And that looks like people leaving medicine or feeling unfulfilled, or in many cases, addiction is an issue, and even suicide. So there's a real opportunity for healing to happen within medicine itself.
So part of both of your, you know, dedication and you know, James, you're bringing the garden and permaculture principles into the mix with Dr. Anna O'Malley in your venture, and then also what we're spiraling out now too. So you know, being in the garden, listeners are secretly communicating messages to me, the spirits backstage going, are there benefits of time in real nature, not virtual or screensavers? Yes, there are. But let me hand it to you for a more detailed animation, possibly.
Well, the garden, the Garden of Eden. It's, well, for those listeners who haven't been to the garden, we have a permaculture site. We have 17 acres on the ocean, and it has a number of elements to the garden, not only the growing of plants and animals, and we have an aquaponic system so people can experience water and fish being in the water, and then that water being used to feed the plants, and what helps is for people to experience, like just really experience what integrated systems look like what an ecology looks like, where there is no waste, everything is moving and it's feeding, and it becomes feed for one in one situation, then it becomes nutrient in another. And so returning to the senses and quietening the mind, you know, because we have this, like, these two aspects to us. We have our pure awareness that experiences our senses. We don't think that smell. We experience the smell. So that awareness, but then we have this crazy mental institution, our thinking mind, which goes in all kinds of strange places because it's never been tended. It's never been guided. You know, hi, we're a planet Earth. You know, here's what it means to be in awe and wonder. And so it's developing, you know, part of what Anna and I are bringing forward is to develop the capacity to actually hold awe and wonder and bring that back into our life, rather than, you know, because we're so immersed in information, which isn't awe, you know, and it's not wonder, it's just bang, 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 you know, and so we take that in. So it's pushing back to be able to really sink into the awe. And when you're confronting this amazing chicken that, you know, looks so beautiful, right, or the bird, the raven who's just come in and is eating the apple and feeding its young, and the swallows and all that, to develop experientially to have, oh, I guess that's the way my whole body operates, you know, like all these the separate parts are all coming together, and Anna could move into that more, like all these systems within us, but they're also outside of us. And I was just thinking, you know, you're talking about the ancient, older traditions, and the Japanese knew that it's a must. You go out and do what they call forest bathing, into the forest to get all the aerosols that all the different trees are bringing forward, and there's a whole ecosystem, and that those aerosols that come off are essential for our well-being. We evolved from the forest. It would be really weird if we weren't intimately connected with all that's happening. Everything that's happening in there, we are connected. And now with some of the new thinking and research, and I love the book Eat Dirt, you know, we're realizing that, oh, in the soil, in the garden, there's bacteria in there that is totally essential for our guts to maintain health, a healthy gut system. So, you know, and we're so removed in our consumer culture that we got to wash everything in the soap and detergent and all this stuff to separate ourselves from this dirty old nature thing. But actually, we need to just be in the delicious nature and reintegrate and have that, because our ultimate health and vitality is only possible when we fully integrate into the rest of the living world.
We're going to come right back after a very short break on that very subject and forest bathing. And as Diana Beresford Kroger says, walk into a pine forest, you always come out smarter. We'll come right back to that. This is the Visionary Activist Show. I'm Caroline Casey. Our splendid guests are James Stark and Dr. Anna O'Malley. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Get down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Ooh, shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Grab my indigo skyship, make his voice long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context. And somewhere between today and next Thursday, September 5th, 1996, was the very first Visionary Activist Show. So here we are, 20 years, oh team, oh woofers, oh, again, you know, who brought what to this party? Such splendid contributors to Renaissance Rising. Reverend Renaissance Rising from the rubble of the whatever it is, empire going down and being composted. There we are. And so our guests today are part of that. You know, we are electing a guiding story, a renaissance of sane reverence, you know, so to reintegrate medicine back with the garden. That's what our team is doing, James Stark and Dr. Anna O'Malley, on the ecological nature of health. And they have a course, the Art of Vitality, Wisdom of the Seasons program, that will be beginning at the end of September. Powerful time now. We need everything to get us through this really quirky election, you know, as Wendell Berry says, be jaunty, even though fully informed. So there we were, James Stark and Dr. Anna O'Malley, Regenerative Design, regenerativedesign.org, and regenerativedesign.org/programs/art-vitality. Okay, but I think regenerativedesign.org will get people there, right?
Perfect. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. And there are a few spaces left in their course, which is you're going to do a year. Wait, you're going to do autumn, winter, spring, under winter.
Spring and summer.
Ah, okay, a whole thing.
So we'll be finishing in summer, in June of 2017.
So So I did just want to repeat, because you were waxing lyrically guiding, James Stark, about forest bathing and these traditions and of intimacy with nature, and you were beginning to touch on also, you know, fragrances and our adorable, also friend of show, you know, ally Diana Beresford Kroger, who, you know, was, we're going to bring up this theme in a moment again, too, was, you know, raised as Druid lore from this distinguished, you know, lineage, and then gets 800 degrees from Harvard, really, to scientifically prove Druid lore. And one of the things that she did say is, walk into a pine forest, you always come out smarter because of the aerosols. So we go, no, yay, mind. We love mind. We love mind.
And her.
And heart and everything. It's a democracy. We like everybody. And there's the toxic mimic of, you know, information versus wisdom. There we go. You know, and Venus and intimacy. So weaving people back into intimacy. You were saying eat dirt. Do you eat dirt yourself, James?
I don't wash our vegetables out of the garden.
Right.
I just pull them out, and
right,
whatever comes up, I think it's perfectly, that's what I need to have. And if there's a little grit, awesome.
Right.
And you only need one little piece of grit. and so that constant infusion, the closer, and I can't remember, it just came up, and I don't know where they're talking about the people who chew their fingernails or are healthier because they're pulling some of that in from working in the garden and stuff. So it's just a revolution. It's moving from, we kind of got into human beings being a monoculture on the planet, and it's moving back to being integrated. We're being reintegrated. It's like integrated agriculture and organic and biodynamic, and we're being woven back into the fabric of life, rather than the whole tendency in our culture is to pull us out of that and to separate us from that and become this mono thing. And we're vulnerable. Our systems are vulnerable. The further away we get from nature, the harder it is to maintain health. But Anna can say more about that. You know, it's interesting what the research is showing. Like, we know that intuitively, but, you know, sometimes our minds like to have, ooh, there's some guy with a white jacket somewhere who's looked at, kicked the tires, and it isn't just woo-woo. It seems to be real.
Right. Yeah, the further we are from nature and each other, I think that there are a lot of isolating tendencies within our culture, and it's really hard on a human being to be isolated, you know, and to experience loneliness and depression. In fact, those are some feeling states that are highly correlated with heart disease and with vascular disease and with cancer, and with, you know, self-soothing strategies like overeating, indulging in sugar and fat-laden comfort foods. And so really honoring our need to be back in connection, to be in connection with each other, and to be experiencing love and intimacy. And that can be romantic love, that can be altruistic love, that can be the love that you experience for your dog or your cat, and also the love that you experience when you're out in nature. And for some people, that because we are so separate and maybe not as practiced as we once were in having a really tender, intimate relationship with nature, it can be a little like, ooh, off-putting, or what does she mean by that? But, you know, I love to just go out and walk through the field and just really be in full appreciation of the beauty of the light that's coming through the grass, or the angle of the light of the setting sun, or the gorgeous colors in the clouds, you know, to really go fully into that experience of love and appreciation. And it releases hormones within your body. Oxytocin is the hormone that's associated with love. It's the bonding hormone that is released when a mom is with a new baby, and it's associated with breastfeeding. And it's also associated with just experiencing love between friends, between lovers, between a person with their pet that they adore. And, you know, having a pet, is even more protective in some studies than having a spouse, depending on your relationship with them.
Definitely.
Okay, everybody who wants to put their hand up for that.
However, if you have a spouse that you have a really loving relationship with, and that is not constant agitation, then that is also an extremely protective thing. But so is having a friend that you have that listening, supportive, loving relationship with.
And what do you think about, you know, that book, General Theory of Love, by three kind of neuroscientist guys, and they said physical, that conversational intimacy on a phone doesn't count. You know, and I think they might be being a little grumpy, rigid, but it is interesting because they were talking about, you know, physical proximity, and they said, you know, therapy changes nothing, insight changes nothing, but you can be improved by, if your therapist is calmer than you, by being in the same physical thing, it actually changes the neurological patterning of your brain. But what do you think about that? Can we still nourish each other on the radio now?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's right. We're overthrowing.
We sending you a wave of love right now.
That's good. That's right.
Right now.
And to everybody, I mean, I do want to say one thing about this show is I get lots of great email, and people go, I'm way out in the wilderness. I'm the only sensible person on a military base. I'm in prison. I'm whatever. And the show makes me feel community. Anyway, so physical proximity, best. But I do want to come back to both of you and Anna first, maybe. Yes, isolation. Yes, that's right. It's a kind of mean trick of the reality police. And I do love my buddy Robert Bly's translation of Kabir, in which he says, long ago you wandered off into the darkness alone, and that's why everything you do has some weird failure to it. Anyway, it's kind of fun. Part of what you're both up to, in a way, and we all want to be up to, is like, everybody, ollie income free. You might have wandered off into some weird darkness by yourself, but that's good. Because solitude is freedom. Hiding and loneliness is prison, right? So that they can look the same. Anna, you were talking about, when we're in the field and feeling kinship and like, oh, the light and the ecstatic thing and yes, I'm part of a large thing. That's not lonely. That's
not lonely.
Right,
that's connected with it all. Being one with it all, and that's what all the spiritual practices. It's something else to cultivate. To be in communion with all of it, and to be in the love that that healing elixir of the universe, as Rumi would describe love. Mm. And it is not loneliness. And you can. I think it's important for people to be in connection with each other, and for communities to provide opportunities for people to be together, for people to reach out to one another, and to be able to support each other in ways that are meaningful. And it's also true that if someone's depressed or feeling isolated and not really knowing what to do, that if they can make one step toward volunteering or to helping another person, to getting out there and walking a dog at the Humane Society, or bringing a meal over to someone else who's shut in, that act of altruism releases those oxytocin, those healing hormones of love, which also is interesting, especially in this election cycle. It's interesting to consider what oxytocin does. It decreases our tendency to mistrust and fear one another, and it promotes bonding. It decreases your likelihood to judge someone. All of these tendencies that create walls or barriers between groups of people, that if we can really just let go and step into being in connection and in loving service to one another, a lot of those tendencies drop, and we can be back in a more natural, whole state of being.
Oh, that's great. So are there actual studies that go altruism releases oxytocin?
Yes.
Fabulous. Yeah. And are you going to, can you send them to me?
Absolutely.
a link, that's really great. No, that's so in keeping with now that I want to, again, toss back to you both in the, kind of guiding astro-mytho dynamic right now. Saturn and Sagittarius with Mars, what is our dedicated desire? But it really represents, the human journey of knowledge, and it squares Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, reverie, what you were bringing up, James, too, about just the real sense of ecstasy at seeing beautiful pattern where there's no waste, and where you see the aquaponics, feeding the fish, which waters the garden, and it's like, oh, that's so beautiful, it's fantastic. So it, just a smidge context to toss back to you both. So we are all assigned now to re-wed knowledge and mysticism and empathic kinship. And we might say in the alleged enlightenment, the boy uninitiated Mars team said, we don't need no mystic thing, no altruism thing, no poetry thing, no symbolic language stuff. We're going straight ahead into knowledge, and we're going to put mackerel genes in this tomato because we're unsupervised boys. Yeah. And I think part of the beauty of terribleness now is at most of the scientific conferences, many of the scientists are weeping because they're finally cannot not express how much they love what they study, and they know more than anybody
the rudeness and damage we're creating as a species. So I do want to toss it back to you, too, about we're re-wedding what's been falsely estranged as a mean trick of the reality police to render people ineffective. We're re-wedding activism and animism, cooperating with nature, and you both are kind of re-wedding. Well, the altruism was the key magic duck descending word that you said, Dr. Anna, and I love that. Altruism releases oxytocin because that's the one thing that Darwin, you know, knew his theory of predator-prey dynamic being evolutionary, you know, engine on this planet, but he knew it didn't account for altruism, but by you saying altruism releases oxytocin, we go, compassion is self-interest, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and when you were touching on how do we access, like, can you have love come over and that experience oxytocin, can you generate that on the phone? You know, whenever we have, and we have a number of phone meetings because I have with, for various people that I'm working with, and we always start with gratitude. And gratitude, as soon as you, so what are you feeling grateful for? So I don't go into my mind. I tune into my heart. What's in my heart? What is my heart singing about? Like, what's lighting that? And then I'm activated, and I don't know if any research has been done on just really the study of gratitude when somebody gets in tune to what are they really feeling grateful for, what happens with chemically, but I suspect it's a similar effect upon the body. So, you know, in some ways, just like you said, we don't need another one of these or one of those, we don't need another guru or all this kind of stuff. It's ultimately, what we're seeking is right there with us. And can we quieten the mind enough to get present to the senses and pull that in and live from the heart, you know, like enter Rumi's field, you know, the big invitation, beyond right and wrong, you know, it's like, and that wasn't, you know, just all a mental thing. It was like being in your body and being guided by the heart. Like, what is it like to live from the heart, live from loving? And I think Anna was being very modest when you asked her about her practice and how she is as a doctor, or, you know, you could frame it as a healer. And I think it's moving the medical world to away from doctors to healers. And and because my experience, I've been to, you know, I'm 71, I've been to a lot of doctors. When I went to Anna for the first time, it was the first time that I felt that I was communicating with somebody who was really holding me in their heart and deeply listening. And through my work with spiritual psychology, I know that the greatest gift we can give anyone is to deeply listen and be in our heart with them. And so for me, that is the first step in, oh, what's moving for you? Where do you want to go? What's vitality? You know, what's challenging you right now? But the healing starts from the heart. It's hard to imagine us moving forward ecologically when we're not operating from the heart, because that's where nature is. That's what's our whole connection to the natural world. And the Haudenosaunee knew that gratitude was essential. Even though they were totally immersed in the natural world, they had a lot of challenges out there. And they...
The
Haudenosaunee people of back east in the Confederacy, when they came together and realized, oh, we've been doing a lot of fighting and battling and that, and realizing that we need to bring in practices and the Thanksgiving address, so they wouldn't start anything until they moved through, which could take days of, okay, I'm grateful for that leaf, and I'm grateful for the waters that move, and I'm grateful for the raven. And so it was like a whole re-presenting to the heart. Now that we've got our hearts together, what is it we need to think about for seven generations, you know? So.
Ah, at last, you're welcoming the mind back. Yay! I'm all for the democracy of everything. It's like, and what about the liver? The liver is the most important organ in Africa. It's where the soul lives. And it's like, I'm for the kidneys. Who wants to speak up for them? But yes, no. I mean, that which has been excluded tends to regain its prominence. So, yes, welcome back, heart. Into the community, just for the perversity of it all. My first guest, September 5th, 1996, was James Hillman, who was, you know, a very contrarian, rascal, kind of liberating Aries guy. But he said, everybody wants to get in touch with their feeling. I want to get in touch with my thinking. And we go, all right, just for the fun of it. Because they do, we love the Hermes. We're in the Hermes hermetic wisdom. You know, again, the mind as happily dancing with heart, just for the fun of the thing. But yes, you know, grateful mind. Yeah.
Can I say something about that?
Of course.
No, in Latin, the root of the word doctor is docere, which means in Latin to teach.
Right.
And so there is this profound opportunity that we can reclaim within medicine to serve as guides, to be showing the way to people. Here is the beauty of your body. Here is the power. Your kidneys are amazing. Your liver is phenomenal. And how do you nourish? How do you give your miraculous, beautiful being exactly what it needs on a physical level, on an energetic level? You know, what water are you drinking? And how is your ecology serving the quality of your water, the quality of the soil? You know, how can we really deeply integrate all of these levels and really be guiding, teaching people how to trust that their body actually can be brought back into balance, and to use the mind. I mean, the mind is it's a powerful, magnificent thing, and we clever humans have tremendous capacity to use it and to hopefully gain wisdom around the use of our clever minds.
Yes.
No, it's a real promise and a real potential for us to re-wed, you know, the mind with the heart, so that we can really truly bring wisdom to our actions.
And that's what a lot of your patients actually say about you, beautiful Dr. Anna, is, you know, bringing back the power of seeking counsel with a physician, you know, doctor, teacher, guide. So you really, I mean, both of you really, but Anna, you really do guide people to their own autonomy, right?
That is my intention.
Yeah.
That is my intention, and it is a privilege, and I feel so blessed to be working within the community that I am working and serving, and to be able to develop. I mean, I am a small town family physician.
Yeah, I know. It's a beautiful,
it's so
rare
beautiful
thing.
It's a beautiful, rare thing to develop relationships and to be able to really be loving with people and to see them in the community and to know them intimately. You know, it's a very powerful thing to know your patients and to care about them and to be serving them in their whole human capacity and potential.
And this, you know, it's a logical progression for Anna and I to come together to create a pathway, because that teacher role, doing it one-on-one in a little clinic in a box, is one thing, but to bring a group of people from the community and create a safe circle where we can begin to explore together, everyone bringing their collective wisdom about the exploring of this intimate thing, which is our health, our capacity to breathe and be well, and which is about, you know, people are really hesitant about that and trust, you know, the trusting a doctor and that kind of thing. But when you can come together in a circle and then just bring it out, like, here are the tender things that I'm concerned about, and then collectively as a group, that unfoldment of pathways forward for each individual person. But what it does is it breaks the lone wolf approach to healing and health, where it's just you and your doctor or the specialist. It's really, oh, what would it be like if there was a whole circle that are supporting my well-being and supporting me and adopting practices that are going to enhance and bring about healthy living for myself. And that's why this reaching out, because as Anna said, it's really challenging in a few minutes in a doctor's office to be able to feel out an approach, a bigger approach, but where you have spaciousness over a year to, oh, let's look at the, are you going for walks? And what do walks do? If you did Qigong and we're integrating Qigong and yoga and all these different practices in, what opens up? And everyone then starts vibrating with, oh, I get this. And then they share that. And it's sort of collective wisdom building within the community. And it's like community healing. Mm-hmm. It's a healing circle.
It is. And the beauty of a circle, the symbolism of a circle, as opposed to that top-down authority power structure that is automatically set up when you go in to talk with the doctor. And it is so much more satisfying for me to serve as a guide and to be integrated into the circle where I am just as human as everybody else, and we are all just humans here having our own healing path, our own healing journey. And you know, we had an initial 3-day weekend back in June, and it was profound to be held as the physician within the circle, but to be just integrated in and being held just as lovingly as we were holding them. It was profound, and it can be somewhat isolating sometimes to be a healer in a community, because there are certain professional boundaries that you need to hold, and it's so beautiful for every human being, especially, I mean, I can speak for myself that, you know, I need it just as much as everybody else.
No, that's a great and complex point. Yeah, the boundaries and you bring up, you know, so many people engaged in helping others, you know, are very alone at night after they're doing the thing. And so both of you again weaving the context. But in our last precious moments of Kahooting for now, and may it be in perpetuity, ongoing. But so what are some fun, good things for everybody now to in this shifty time? There's zero fixed planets. It's highly mutable. People are kind of wired and stressed, and their toxicity is emerging, but they're also very up for counsel and gratitude. And what's a good soup? you promised soup recipes, Anna, and I saw it in the promotional recipes. Does anybody have a good soup recipe? Something.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm just gonna give my favorite chef and recipe resource, which is Rebecca Katz. She's a local collaborator who also works at Common Wheel, and she's really into food as medicine, and her cookbooks are fantastic. So I would highly recommend any of her soup recipes. But basically, you know, now is the time, we're moving into the harvest season, and the energy is drawing her, nature is drawing her energy down into the roots. And so, you know, a nice earthy, you know, lots of like carrots, and as we move a little bit more into the autumn season, we're still in that transition. I mean, this is actually a great time for cleansing as we're in the transition right up through equinox. But as we're moving fully into fall, that's a great time to really be eating those yummy root vegetables.
They're rooting for us. We're rooting for them. And if you want to know the rest of the recipe, you'll have to sign up for the Art of Vitality at regenerativedesign.org. We're on our way, but roots, okay, and the rest of the recipe is if you sign up for the course. Okay, The Art of Vitality, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, James Stark and Dr. Anna O'Malley. I'm Caroline Casey.
Thank you.
Alex Drewiskus in Washington, D.C., and our beautiful allies out there in KPFA land, Erica and Woof Woof Woof. And it's the ongoing celebration of 20 years of Visionary Activist Show from now until then. Yay, woof, more soon, later. Why?
This is Dennis Bernstein, host of Flashpoints.
This is Miguel Gavilan Molina, host and senior producer of Flashpoints.
Heard on KPFA every weekday from 5 to 6.
Flashpoints is a hard-hitting news magazine that monitors the centers of power and reports back to the people.
We bring community radio into the community and give voice to the voiceless, from occupied Palestine to the falsely accused on death row.
From the brown revolutions in the fields of misery to the front lines of the new labor and civil rights movement.
On Flashpoints, black and brown lives really do matter. So join us here on KPFA every weekday at 5 p.m. Thank you. Wondering whether it's possible to have free and fair elections in the USA? Greg Palast, great investigative reporter, now sleuthing for Rolling Stone on the 2016 elections, will be appearing with his explosive new documentary film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, on Wednesday evening, September 7th, at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland. This Bay Area premiere, one screening only at 7 p.m., is a special KPFA benefit. Political comic Will Durst will perform. This is Dennis Bernstein, hoping to see you there. Tickets at brownpapertickets.com and the best indie bookshops. Check the KPFA website for this Greg Palast event, a special.